Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, the Black Hills Forest Service signed a post-pine beetle epidemic initiative meant to strengthen the forest against future infestations and wildfires. Black Hills National Forest Supervisor Mark Van Every says the Black Hills Resilient Landscape Project should prevent another infestation going forward. SDPB's Lee Strubinger sat down with Van Every for a look at the project and current forest health.
The decision authorizes the kinds of activities that we can do, and it authorizes under what conditions and where those might occur. But it doesn't tell us how fast they'll occur or over what long-range time frame that will happen. That's more of a budgetary question or a priority question.
I can't help but think that, you know, a lot of people would be concerned about the changing of the scenery and those sorts of things. Can you address a little bit of that?
Sure. You know, when we look at natural resource management, in particular, we're talking about trees. They're slow growing, and we look at them on the basis of our time frame that we observe them, and things change relatively slowly. So we think they're always going to stay the same. They don't, and so the biggest impact that we've had on the forest over the last, say, 10 years. Has come from the mountain pine beetle, and that's caused a significant change in the landscape. Part of the reason that that mountain pine beetle epidemic was so extensive and so impactful was because we had conditions that were exactly what was needed for the mountain pine beetle to grow in population very rapidly and had abundant food source that they ate themselves out of house and home, essentially. What we don't want to do is create those same conditions for a future epidemic, and so that requires some active management, or there's going to be other natural events. We're going to continue to have wildfires. We're going to have other things that will change that landscape. So this is a part of that process, but it gives us an opportunity to have some, albeit at times feels like limited, control over how those natural events may play out and how extensive the effects of those would be. And so this is a good way to do that. If you look at historic photos from this area, like from the time of the Custer expedition, it looked very different than it does today. There was a lot less trees than we had, say, 5 or 6 years ago. What we have now in some places is probably more similar to what was there at that time. So there's always a balancing act. You have to determine what your objectives are and what you're trying to manage for, and then there's a variety of tools that you can use to get there.
How is the Resilient Landscapes Project kind of different from what's going on right now?
Up until really the last year or two, we were focused primarily on responding to the mountain pine beetle epidemic, either taking advantage of trees that were already dead or dying to harvest them and use them for wood products. And at the same time, trying to get out in front of the mountain pine beetle and take their food source away by thinning out the trees so that the remaining trees have a higher probability of surviving. But now that the beetle population has declined to what we would call more of a natural or background level, that's not the concern. The concern is trying to get back in balance with those structural stages. So, for example, we have a structural stage that's called 4A. That's not going to mean anything to most people, but basically what that means is it's a stand with some older, larger trees thinned to a fairly wide spacing, and then you have a large number of young trees beginning to come in underneath those older trees. Under our forest plan, we call for about 25% of the forest to be in that condition as a result of the mountain pine beetle itself and then our actions to try to reduce the impacts. We now have somewhere between 40 and 50% of the forest in that condition. So a much larger percentage than what our forest plan calls for. That means there's less habitat for wildlife of other types of structural stages. And it also means that we're creating, again, the conditions, that's the kind of condition that results in a lot of young trees, very dense, beginning to grow in that understory. And those are going to be, over time, more susceptible to fire, more susceptible to insects and disease if they're not thinned and managed. And so keeping those older trees on the top of those stands continues to add more seed to the soil and increases the density of those trees.
I want to go back to last summer and sort of paralleling it with this summer. T- two completely different summers, this time last year. What are you kind of seeing with all this moisture right now?
Yeah, very different circumstances from what we had last year. Last year we were below normal. We were in the, you know, still in the continuation of drought conditions. This year we, in most areas, have recovered from the drought and we're at or above normal. For example, throughout most of the forest this year, our rainfall in June was 200% of the normal rainfall for the month of June. And then in July, normally we don't get a lot of rain. We've already gotten rain in a number of places and in fairly significant amounts. So our fire danger right now is pretty low. That doesn't mean we can't have a fire. And we do continue to have small starts that, thankfully, because of the conditions, we're able to put out pretty quickly. They don't spread rapidly. But all it would take is about a two-week period of very hot, dry weather with no precipitation. And all this grass we've been blessed with that's very high would dry out and become a very good fuel source to carry a fire. So I think eventually the spigot's going to turn off, as it does almost every year. And when it does, things are going to dry out. It's just a question of how soon that might happen and what the risk would be later in the summer. If we continue to get cloudy conditions like we have today and cooler temperatures, then that risk is going to continue to stay low. If not, we could be into a challenging fire situation as we go into August.
That was Black Hills Forest Supervisor Mark Van Every, who spoke with SDPB's Lee Strubinger earlier this month about the Black Hills Resilient Landscape Project, and that has now been signed by the Forest Service. Lee Strubinger joins us now from the SDPB Black Hills studio for more. Lee, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here.
Last week I was in the Black Hills broadcasting in the moment, and you and I barely got to talk to each other because you were working on gathering this story and I was doing the program. So much more to talk about here. So last week you were spending time talking with folks about this project. Let's start with the timber industry. How are they reacting?
Well, I wasn't able to reach him, but the Rapid City Journal reports that Ben Wudke, who is the executive director of the Black Hills Forest Resource Association, which is a timber industry group, they say that the companies in that association really support this project. So it seems that the timber industry is in favor of it, by and large. I did speak with a gentleman by the name of Alan Aker, who is both a logger and also owns a home in close to the National Forest. He considers himself a neighbor to the National Forest. He has a tree farm, and so a lot of what the Forest Service does kind of bleeds into what he does. And as a lifelong logger, he says that, you know, what he's observed over the past several years is that the timber industry is still reeling from losing basically a third of the resources from that mountain pine beetle infestation. And Aker says since 1985, the forest has had enormous wildfires that weren't happening the prior 50 years before that.
So what is Aker's take on the Resilient Landscapes Project?
Well, he says a lot of the project is good because it recognizes that thinning is needed for a lot of these oversprouted areas, this oversprouting timber, especially in a lot of those burn areas that we were talking about. But his main concern is that the project calls for more burning.
I worry about that as a neighbor to the National Forest. But the other problem in the long run is it's hard to manage pine by burning. The reason is they think that pre-European settlement, any given acre of the Black Hills had a fire on it every 5 years. So it was a very high frequency event, but a very low intensity fire. Because when the fire's coming that often, the fuel doesn't build up much. And you find a lot of trees live through that low intensity fire.
And Aker says there's two problems when it comes to fire utilization. A lot of homes and ranches in the Black Hills that those fires would affect a lot of those private holdings.
Right.
And it's also hard to have those fires every 5 years. He says it's equally a funding issue, but also a weather issue to have those prescribed burns Generally, they're held during the spring and fall on days that aren't too windy, that are not too dry, but also not too wet. And he says there's basically a limited number of days in a given year that these controlled burns can be done. As for a cost estimate, the Forest Service hasn't really projected a cost or a funding source. A Forest Service spokesperson said that they will tackle this project as funding allows.
What are some of the ecological concerns about the project, you know, going forward?
I spoke with a member of the Norbeck Society, which is a local advocacy group that focuses on natural resources on public lands. And that group says they're concerned about what's called a depletion trend of the forest's standing inventory. Of particular interest to the Norbeck Society is what's called the allowable sale quantity, which is a ceiling that the timber industry kind of caps off what they're allowed to cut down in the forest. And the Norbeck Society says that that ceiling hasn't changed since 1997, which was kind of during the beginning of the pine beetle epidemic. And David Millers, who I talked with from the Norbeck Society, he says their major concern is what the allowable cut ought to be.
We've got to stop taking wood faster than we're replacing it. We're not laying blame. We're saying this, we have got to come to a way to do that. And it strikes me as very significant. That's why we're concerned. This is a big time item.
They're concerned about the amount of logging, given that infestation and large fires over the last several years have taken place.
Would you say that they're more concerned about what has already happened, or they're more concerned about the future? Where are they leaning with their concerns, or is it just both?
It's definitely both. It has to do with trees that were lost and continued logging.
Interesting. All right. So, what does the Forest Service have to say about allowable sale quantity?
Well, they're kind of the ASQ, as it's called, isn't directly related to the Resilience Landscapes Project.
Right.
But the forest supervisor Mark Van Every, he says that the Forest Service has those same concerns as the Norbeck Society.
We want to make sure that how we're managing the forest and the level of harvest we're doing is sustainable ecologically over the long haul.
So how they're going to do that is Van Every says the Forest Service is in the second of a two-year summer project where they're surveying about 450 plots of land across the forest. And those surveys will help the Forest Service determine what is a sustainable harvest going forward. Van Every says they're planning on having a collaborative discussion with those interested parties like the Norbeck Society going forward.
Lee, as you talked to people, does everybody seem to be kind of on the same page and they're just sort of, you know, looking at some of the, you know, how many trees, you know, what are the numbers, how are we managing this? Or are you seeing some historical, you know, lack of trust between, you know, different groups of people?
I don't necessarily see any lack of trust. I think it's safe to assume that everybody wants a healthy forest going forward.
Right.
Obviously, opinions are going to differ a little bit here and there about how that is achieved. But I think the Forest Service has an open ear to a lot of those concerns, and they're really bringing a lot of people together. Keep in mind, this is Forest Supervisor Mark Van Every's. He's going into his second year as forest supervisor.
Right.
Many people are saying he's bringing a different approach.
All right. So to provide more information for listeners, we'll link to the Forest Service's final environmental impact statement on our website so you can look at that data yourself. That's at listen.sdpb.org. SDPB's Lee Strubinger, thank you so much for all the work that you put into this one.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks, Lori.